I have to keep it on green, right, so people can hear?
Yeah, but you hung it up.
Oh, I did? No. Okay. Yes.
Do you ask folks, did they sign in or were they from?
Yeah, actually a sign-up sheet would be great, just so we could be able to know, but. It's always awkward being from the tax people asking where people are from.
Yeah.
When you work for revenue, you have to take a good perspective on things.
That's when I went in the hall, I looked there and I was looking at those pictures of them guys out in the hall and I wondered, which one of them is spending most of my money? They're all spending too much.
We just collected.
I was kind of liking the chairs and thinking,
yeah.
I look at the chairs in my house and I'm thinking, boy. Who's working for who?
I understand. I typically like to walk around, but since there's going to be people on the phone, I'm going to have to stick close to this. So if people can't hear me, I need a waiver. Let me know. Exactly. Yeah, you can help me use the phone when they get out of hand on there. Exactly.
I think you have one or two more people that are coming in.
Okay.
You get really good at it if you had one of these phones when they're 35 cents a minute, you know, and you get it. So you tell you 50 seconds, and you're thinking, is it worth it? Okay, I got to go.
That's great.
But now you just say, my batteries are running low.
Yep.
I got another call.
You do that to me all the time.
It's fine.
You do that to everyone except me because you're smart.
We have our office and our catch
Yes.
You're all just do a quick intro.
Okay.
What's your title? You have a title.
Deputy Commissioner now.
My name is Mike Dunleavy. I'm a senator for the Valley, District D. Mike Pulowski, he's the deputy commissioner with the Department of Revenue. We're here today to talk about the education tax credit for non-public schools in the state of Alaska. And so what Mike's going to do is he's going to give you a background on the law, how long the law has actually been in place, because it's been in place for some time, and what's happened is we've just added different components to the law. We'll talk about who can be recipients, meaning the schools themselves, who can be donors, meaning the corporations, and how they get tax credits and how this all works. And then I've worked with Mr. Pulowski for some time. He's very good at presenting, and he will answer any and all questions that you have. This is new ground for folks here, but just very curious if we can just briefly go around and identify yourself.
For more than 50 years, the Alaska State Legislature has overcome many obstacles.
Anyway, so if we can start here, can you just identify yourself and who you're with? That'd be nice.
Lee Carter, finance officer, manager of your Anchorage Christian.
Jason Hoffinger, administrator of Anchorage.
and this one also, I'm going to report for Holy Ghost Rosary Academy.
Great.
Tim Garman from Big Lake. I was just here to see how the money's going.
I'm Tyler Geierman. I'm here with him to see where he's going.
Debbie Miller, Lumen Christi High School.
Great.
Mike Buzz on Lumen Christi High School.
Great.
Christina Johannes. I was on the Board of Holy Rosary, but I have.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Can we have folks online?
Yeah, can we go online and find out who's online? And I'm going to ask you just for the flow of the presentation and then the room to go on mute on your end, because we can't mute on this end, I guess. So who do we have online?
We have Fairbanks.
Who do we have online in Fairbanks?
Can they hear you?
Can you hear me? In Ketchikan. Okay. And do we have anybody calling in individually? All right, well, I'm going to hope and assume that people can hear me. As Senator Dunleavy said, my name is Mike Pawlowski. I'm the Deputy Commissioner. Hello? Can you go on mute? Thank you. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. I've been in that position for a couple of years now, and with the department for a couple of years now. In addition to what the senator said, I'd like to also be available as a resource. In the back of the presentation, you'll see contact information, both for myself and Lacey Wilcox, who does a lot of the outreach and public answers questions from the public on behalf of the department. So I'm not assuming that I'll answer all of your questions today. Often when we get into tax circumstances, each individual instance is going to be very different, and I want to be very careful about encouraging you to work with us on individual circumstances, as opposed to starting off and saying this generally is okay, but rather let's start talking about what the law is, where it's gone, leave you with some high level ideas of really what a donor's responsibilities are, what a recipient's responsibilities are, and what are the responsibilities of the Department of Revenue. So with that, I'd like to kick off and go to slide 2 for those following on the phone. As the senator said, Alaska's Education Tax Credit Program has been in effect since 1987. This is not a new program in the state of Alaska. The legislature intended in establishing the law in the first place to provide a mechanism for really businesses to work with charitable organizations to create opportunities for Alaska's kids. And we've seen over the years that evolve as additional groups and people eligible to receive these contributions have been added to the list. Most recently, last session, Governor Parnell's Education Opportunity Act was passed by the legislature. That was a landmark step for this law in expanding the availability and eligibility to non-public schools, nonprofit schools that are K-12 and secondary, and providing some additional opportunities for businesses to partner with educational institutions in the state on a wide range of things to provide opportunities for our kids. So again, on slide 3, what I said that I'd walk through is really just understanding some basics about the tax credit, and then I'll get into responsibilities, and then open it up really for questions, because I prefer that we make this a dialogue, at least with those people in the room, and I'm available, if not to get specific to the question, you know, take it back and work with you. So the Education Tax Credit Program, unlike a lot of our more complicated tax credit programs, is really based on the statute. There are not regulations that you're going to go look at. We believe that the statute generally is very clear. We're reviewing some of the recent additions, but the statute itself is really what provides the guidance for you as a recipient or for you as a potential donor. The general concept is that a taxpayer gets to claim a credit against several different tax types for cash contributions to eligible programs and institutions or organizations. The eligible organizations receive that donation, and they may use that cash for specific purposes. Now, those specific purposes are articulated in the statute, and we'll get into some examples. The Department of Revenue, all that we really do is review tax returns and audit taxpayers. Unlike you'll see in a lot of other states that have programs like this, where the department centralizes collections, make decisions about where it goes, the point that the legislation did is really keep the department more in a ministerial administrative role and really leave it up to the community and the businesses to identify and build those partnerships between themselves. We don't stand in the middle. What we do instead is audit a taxpayer who claims that tax credit on their tax returns. So there's some general tax types. I think another important thing for me to say is that the Department of Revenue operates under very strict confidentiality laws. They protect taxpayer information, but also activities. We have a voluntary tax system where taxpayers voluntarily share information with us. And in order to facilitate that, we have to keep things confidential. So we will never be able to give lists of businesses who are taxpayers. I can't tell somebody who is or is not a taxpayer. Rather, what you can do is look through these tax types and get a feeling about what and who are potential taxpayers. But that's really up to the taxpayer to tell you. Similarly, when a taxpayer makes a donation to an institution, that is not and will not be public information. That is a credit that a taxpayer claims on their individual return and is protected by the department. We will not be able to answer that, just as I can't disclose an individual's taxpayer returns, or you wouldn't have the IRS disclosing what you individually are filing as your deductions. That's how we protect taxpayer information. So I think that's really important as sort of a basis to recognize as you as potential taxpayers think about interacting with a business or an organization, or you as an organization think about reaching out to taxpayers. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question right now.
Absolutely.
So these donations are not subject to public information. If, you know, someone wanted to submit a request for public information on this issue,
they could not get that, and it will never come from the Department of Revenue. However, if the individual taxpayer and the organization work out an agreement over what they want to share, it's fully within their power to broadcast that, A, I donated to this group, or the receiving organization with the taxpayer's consent to say we receive donations from these groups. But we will never publish what their tax benefits are or that they actually have that. That can't come from us.
Mm-hmm. But I just realized that the recipient will probably have to disclose it on their 990.
Most likely they would, but that's what you want to get with your individual, with your tax counsel as your nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So we have really seven eligible tax types, and I've created a separation here because there are some different eligible organizations depending on the tax type you're talking about. The broadest tax type that many businesses in Alaska are subject to is the Alaska Net Income Tax Act. That's our general corporate income tax in the state of Alaska. We follow the federal system, so it is basically, a taxpayer pays in the same way they do with their federal return. But the state levies a corporate income tax on businesses in Alaska that do business here. Now, it's important to recognize that limited liability companies, sole proprietorships, those are not subject to corporate income tax in the state of Alaska. Yes.
So could you give some examples of standing outfits in Alaska that would fall under that category?
Sure. Since I know they're published, you can think of generally the oil companies. We list in our revenue sources book publicly that there's income tax paid by oil and gas companies. I think any other large corporation.
Native corporations?
Many of the subsidiaries, yes, and many of the native corporations are subject to corporate income tax in the state of Alaska.
Is there a list of those types of corporations that DOR has that could be public, just a list that are eligible?
No, because that's an individual taxpayer determination, so we can't put out that somebody is or is not a taxpayer. That's actually covered under our confidentiality.
Even if they had paid taxes in a previous year?
Yes. It's the way the statute's written to protect taxpayer confidentiality. Yes, ma'am.
Is this net income tax levied on all corporations or just corporations of a certain type?
It's levied on corporations of a specific type.
And that information is public, though, right?
Yes, the type of corporation. They're C corps. Yep, subchapter C corporations. What you'll generally find is that businesses know what taxes they pay. And as you reach out to the community, it's better to recognize that that's why it's not just one tax type. Yes?
When I did a search one time, several times, because you can download, you know, the corporation from the state of Alaska, but I don't think that you have a column that says subchapter C.
I don't know if you do or don't, yeah.
I wondered if the state would be willing to, you know, you might make a note of that.
Yeah.
They would be willing to add that column to their download list, you know, because they do have, like, it's a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a limited liability, et cetera. They have that column, but they don't, to my recollection, they don't have a column that says this is a subchapter C corporation.
That's right. And
I don't know if that could be public information or not.
It might be through the business licensing at the Department of Commerce, and that's an interesting thing that I'll talk
to. You can download through that through there.
Yeah, I'll bring that up to the Commissioner of Commerce as something that might be helpful. Yeah.
What's the rate?
The rate varies. It's progressive, so it starts off at, I believe, $50,000 in annual income and then ratchets up. It goes up to 9.4% is where it tops out. And that has recently been changed to smooth out some of those brackets in the state. And the way it works is that's prior to your federal taxes. So companies that pay federal tax, you have your state tax return as well. So in addition to the Alaska Net Income Tax Act, there's also the mining license tax. These are operating mines. There's the fisheries business tax and the fisheries resource landing tax. After that, we also have a tax on insurance premiums. So if it's an insurance company, they pay an insurance premium tax in the state of Alaska. That's actually one of our largest revenue generators in the state is insurance premium. Then there's the oil and gas production tax. These are producing companies. An oil and gas property tax, which is not limited to a producing company. You actually will have a lot of service companies that have infrastructure because the way our property tax for oil and gas works is it's tangible personal property involved in the exploration for or development of oil and gas resources. So you can think about a drilling rig is a tangible piece of property. That will be subject to a property tax. That's levied at the statewide level, and then municipalities where it's operating in have a claim on that revenue. The vast majority of property tax revenue raised on oil and gas property goes actually to the municipalities, not to the state. That's a key point, too, that the credits are only claimed by a taxpayer. So if you're a taxpayer thinking about supporting an organization, those credits only apply against the portion that goes against the state revenues, not against local property taxes that are levied on that property. So the annual limits for the credit schedule are prescribed in statute, and the way the limits work is you have a donor can generate up to $5 million annually in potential credits across all of these tax types. So a person or a corporation, if you're a company thinking about, say I'm a fishing company, I don't have a tax liability large enough on my fisheries business tax to meet the donation that I want, but I might have it in combination between my net income tax and my fisheries business tax. So you can use the credit as a business against any of the eligible tax types. The way the credit works is it's 50% of the first $100,000 in donation, then 100% of the next $200,000, and then 50% of the amount that exceeds $300,000, up to $5 million annually. And so I've done a little example here, again, using that fisheries concept. So let's say Company A has tax liabilities in the state for corporate income and fisheries business tax. They make a $175,000 donation to a coastal ecosystem learning center to support salmon research, something they might do. They can claim a credit of $50,000 plus $75,000 against either one of those taxes, and you claim that as a company when you file your tax return. It's not something you come to the Department of Revenue and say, I need a credit certificate. You actually just file it in the normal course, just as you think of a deduction on your own personal taxes, that you've claimed this credit and you're eligible for it because the statute is clear that the donation is eligible. Yes, sir.
You said earlier that you guys audit taxpayers
mm-hmm.
who make these contributions.
That's right.
So does that cause this Company A hardship?
That's something that I'll get into in the responsibilities, because the company needs to be clear that they're working with an organization that's eligible to receive these. Those are the types of things that the department will look for. Is are you actually working with a 501c3 registered group? Are they eligible? You're not just giving it to anybody. So that's a lot of the responsibility on the company claiming the credit is to do the diligence on the organization they're working with. That's an important thing, just as it's important for an organization seeking donations to be prepared to provide what that company needs to be able to protect itself in an audit. And those are the types of things we're happy to talk through with taxpayers and talk through with organizations as you get individualized circumstances, because there's such a wide range of eligible activities.
And who'd you say that Lacey, what was Lacey?
Lacey Wilcox. Yep. Her information's at the back end of the presentation. Now, many people have heard about some of our tax credit programs in the state that are transferable or refundable. This credit is not one of those credits. A company has to have a tax liability to use the credit to offset it. It's not, if your credit exceeds your tax liability, the state will write a check for the difference. That's not the way this program works. There are programs in the state that work that way, but the education credit is not one of them. However, you're not limited to using a credit against any one tax. You can use it against any of the eligible taxes that you can claim that credit against. So let's talk about some of the eligible organizations. And again, these are listed in statute. So you've got a nonprofit agency, a nonprofit public or private accredited Alaska 2 or 4 year college, Alaska non-public and private nonprofit elementary or secondary schools or school districts, state-operated vocational technical education and training schools, nonprofit regional vocational training centers, apprenticeship programs, coastal ecosystem learning centers, Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund, post-secondary institution in the state providing dual credit courses, a residential school in the state, a tribal entity, or the Department of Education and Early Development. One of the things that you will find, and one of the reasons I encourage you to talk to your legislative office or the Department of Revenue, is that because this credit is available across multiple tax types, you'll see the statute is repeated multiple times. So the credit looks the same in the fisheries business tax as it does in the fisheries license tax. And so what I've done at the bottom is inserted the definition of nonprofit organization. You'll notice there's multiple statutory references. And again, that's just repeating the definition for the different tax types. But a nonprofit organization is defined as a charitable or educational organization that's a 501c3. So when we think about the importance of being a recipient, it's being sure that you as a recipient have your paperwork in order. So there's a lot of opportunity for businesses with different tax obligations to participate in this program, as you see a wide range of eligible organizations. Well, there's also a wide range of eligible expenditures, and each one of them is going to be different depending on the tax type that you're looking at. Generally speaking, there are similar expenditure that are eligible across the four tax types I separated out earlier, and that's the Net Income Tax Act, which again I said is the most common tax faced by businesses in Alaska, then the mining license, the fisheries business, and the fisheries resource landing tax. So let's talk about an example of and this was one of the additions in the Education Opportunity Act. Let's talk about a non-public school that is a 501c3 that wants to start a STEM program. That's Science, Technology, Engineering, Management program to increase opportunities for their K-12 students. Then we've got another company that pays taxes, corporate income, and mining license. They want to donate $1 million to get this program up and running. So the non-public school just has to ensure that the donated funds are being spent on that STEM program. During the legislature's deliberation on this, there's a lot of talk about segregated accounts, just as I think many organizations are familiar with, like setting up a scholarship account. You separate that scholarship and then it has eligible things that it can be used for. Those are things you're going to want to work with on your donors to ensure that the contributions a group is receiving are being spent appropriately. Also demonstrating to the donors that you're eligible as, say, a 501c3 or some other organization that is eligible under the statute. So that company that provided the $1 million can claim up to $600,000 on their tax returns. Because remember, it's 50% of the first $100,000. That's why what I've done in the presentation is $50,000 plus 100% of that next $100,000 between $200,000 and $300,000, and then 50% above $300,000. So that's $700 divided by 2 is $350,000 plus the $200,000 plus the $50,000 gets to $600,000 that they can claim on their taxes. Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to clarify the wording here on the first paragraph. Says what the donated funds may be used for depends on the tax against which the credit is applied, and then you say at the end that they have one set of eligible expenditures. So are you saying that all of these different taxes, 1, 2, 3, and 4, have the same set of eligible expenditures?
Yes. Okay. That's where I was going, was these four taxes have the same set of eligible expenditures. And that's because those four taxes were included in the Education Opportunity Act passed this session with all of the additions.
So if you know one, you know the other one.
If you know one, you know the other one. That's right. Where it differs is when we get to the insurance tax, the oil and gas production tax, and the oil and gas property tax. Those tax types were not included in the additions to the education tax credit this last session. I think part of the reason for that was they were moving in a separate piece of legislation. There were provisions that were expanded, but that legislation passed prior to the education bill actually passing this last session. So that, if you're looking towards taxpayers that are in the oil and gas production, oil and gas property, or insurance tax, or if you're a company that has one of those, you have to look at those statutes because they're going to be different than what was passed last session. What was added to those was really the apprenticeship programs run by the Department of Military and Veterans, or approved by the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I've got an example here of, say we've got an apprenticeship program, they want to expand by building a new welding training facility. Company C pays taxes under the oil and gas production tax and would like to support the program with a $750,000 donation. What I'm really trying to illustrate with this example is they can get a credit up to $475,000 and can claim it against the production tax, but not the property tax. Because in the property tax version of that credit, this is not an eligible organization. This is where it is a little bit trickier when you get into those tax types. Does that make sense? Sure.
So the oil and gas production tax, the oil and gas property tax, and the insurance tax are not part of this expanded recipient list.
They're not.
Okay.
Yep.
So whatever was added, these entities that are eligible, the new entities that were added, they're excluded from this
From these three tax types, yes. Now, there are education credits available under those three tax types that may be appropriate for different organizations. And so what I mean is it depends on what a particular group is trying to do. Look at the eligible expenditures in the statute, and there may be things for a facility that qualify. I don't want to imply to anybody that they're naturally excluded from those. All I'm trying to call attention to is that those statutes are different than the statutes in the other four tax types. So when you're approaching companies or companies are approaching you, it's important to try and get a feeling of what their tax liability that they believe is under, so you can help them guide to what are the appropriate eligible expenditures. And that's where I encourage you, as you get a specific example, to reach out to the department and let us work with you and help walk through how to build the right partnership between you and the donating organization. Or if you're a taxpayer, let us help you identify what you need to do to get there. And that's where I was going to go. We just started to talk a little bit about this, is the difference in what was changed in the two pieces of legislation that passed this last session. On the left is Senate Bill 138. That was the bill that authorized the state participation in the large-scale liquefied natural gas project. That legislation included language that amended the education credit for the oil and gas production tax. And it was very specific. The eligible institutions in that were really linked to apprenticeship programs and training centers. House Bill 278 was the bill that I believe we're here to really talk about, and that was the Comprehensive Education Reform and Funding Bill. That amended the education credit for the four tax types we talked about initially: the corporate income, mining license, fisheries business, and fisheries resource landing tax. And let's take a minute and walk through what the open new additions do. So first we've got, you know, a public or private nonprofit elementary or secondary schools were added as eligible organizations for direct instruction, research, and educational support purposes. That's actually a very broad statute supporting that business partnership with an educational institution, be it public, non-public. The key is not-for-profit. Funding for a scholarship awarded by a nonprofit organization to a dual credit student to defray the cost of a dual credit course. Dual credit is when you have a kid in K-12 working on a class that actually provides college credit as well, or post-secondary credit. Now, with those often come tuition, extra fees, books, travel expenses. All of those are going to be eligible for a scholarship program. But that scholarship program is set up by an organization that's a nonprofit organization, not necessarily a non-public school or a private school or a school district. That's actually an organization might set up its own scholarship program to say, let's say a Lions Club says, we want to provide support for our kids in our community that are challenging themselves with college courses while they're in secondary courses, but we got to get them books, we got to get them better calculators for that. Then they can receive donations for that scholarship fund to provide that support for those kids. Constructing, operating, or maintaining a residential housing facility. This is for a lot of the schools that provide opportunity for distance and people coming into a centralized location. Childhood early learning programs provided by a nonprofit corporation organized under 1020, that's in our corporation statutes, that's a state nonprofit code, a tribal entity or school district in the state. And then the last one is operation of a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing educational opportunities that promote a legacy of public service contributions to the state. That actually, I believe, has a fairly broad opportunity for organizations that are supporting public service and activity in the state of Alaska to partner and claim this credit. Any questions on those additions? And this is where I walk through that. So the nonprofit organization wants to create a scholarship program for students pursuing dual credit courses by covering those tuition or textbooks. I kind of walked through that earlier. The point I'm trying to make here for a company is that in this example, the company generates an initial donation, a large donation, that exceeds their tax liability. And if you're a company doing that, you cannot carry it forward. It's claimed in the year you make the donation. So the company could use the credit up to $25,000, even though they have $100,000 of eligible credit in this example. And then in the subsequent years, they'd be able to use the credit that they're generating based on their annual donations. So the next thing, I've hinted at this and talked about it, I think, throughout, is that everyone really needs to familiarize themselves with the statutes. Companies that are looking at partnering with organizations, organizations that are looking at partnering with companies. You have great resources in your legislators and legislative information office to help you locate those statutes, walk through them. We always advise people to talk to some tax counsel. More on the taxpayer side, but most organizations generally have some tax counsel available to them. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Mm-hmm. Back on the next page. I'm
sure.
Trying to do this in my head. So see if I understand it. So if the if the company only has a liability of $25,000,
yep.
Wouldn't that mean that they can only take a credit of $12,500 for that first $100,000?
No, they're what I'm trying to
take the whole. Take the maximum that they gave?
They could take, if they gave $100,000, they would be eligible for 50% of that $100,000.
Based on what they give rather than what their liability is.
That's right.
Okay.
But
so
they will earn a credit, but in reality they can only use up to what their tax liability is. They can't reduce their tax liability below zero.
Less of a tax liability gets a better tax credit than someone who has a greater one. Because you could actually defer your whole tax credit whereas someone else.
They're going to get the same monetary benefit. It's just, are you going to pay tax or not pay tax is going to depend on, does your credit use up your whole tax liability? The other thing you'll find is that if a company doesn't have a substantial tax liability, and this is at the state, there may be additional federal benefits, but they will only be able to realize a benefit up to their tax liability. That's the point I'm trying to make for, yeah. Point for companies, because we actually do get a lot of companies that approach us and talk to us about these credits, in case we have some on the line, and trying to think about it from their perspective, too. Again, the department, in addition to your legislative office, we're here to help, and if there's things you need, Lacey and my contact information is in there. Again, each individual example is going to be different. And we'll work through individual examples on a one-on-one basis as opposed to in groups because of our role as a confidentiality and taxpayer information. But as an organization looking to receive donations, really pay special attention to your eligibility. Are you eligible under the statute to receive? And then are you doing the appropriate tracking of the expenditure? So is the money being spent for an eligible expenditure? Not just that you received it, not just that the intent was to do what you said you were going to do with it, but that you're actually doing it. And that's important for your donors. Now, as a donor, it's really important to be conscious of the variation in your tax eligibility depending on your tax type. And this is why I always encourage donors to talk to their tax counsel as well, their accountant, is that there may be federal implications of receiving a state tax credit because it's a benefit and it has implications on your federal tax. So the federal tax might actually minimize a little bit of the benefit you're getting from the state donation. And that's just going to depend on how it deducts in your federal income tax. But those are things really to think about. The department, again, what we do is we review tax returns. We don't come and audit organizations that are receiving. There should be a paper trail in relationship between a receiving organization and a taxpayer. We focus on auditing the taxpayers. Was it an eligible organization? Was it claimed appropriately in the tax year? Was the credit based on the actual donation? Those are the types of things we're going to look for. But again, we don't do that as a pre-approval. We do that in the review of taxpayers' tax returns. That's a link to the legislative statutes. And then while I can't give you information on individual taxpayers or lists of businesses that are taxpayers, I've provided a link that the tax division itself issues an annual report. That annual report is actually a really valuable document because it breaks down each tax type, talks about the total number of taxpayers we have in the state, doesn't give you any individual information on them, but really describes the tax type. And as people who know the community, if you're looking for outreach, I think that's going to give you a lot of information on who to reach out to, who to target, who to have conversations around. So I think that's the best resource we have available. I'll follow up with the Commissioner of Commerce to see if there's things in business license reporting that would be public information that can come from a different department than us. And so, again, that's Lacey's contact information and my contact information, my email, Lacey's email. The phone will go through Lacey, but, again, I'm happy to spend time with people individually. This is a really big step for the state. It was one of the governor's top priorities to expand the opportunities for kids, to open up this relationship to non-public schools and really build opportunities to just increase what's available for kids in Alaska, and we're here to support it. Yes, sir.
So just clarification to make sure I understand this. The program is designed either for a recipient organization or for a specific program. So if the donor donated money to an organization, then there's no ties on where they want that money to go. It's just here you use it in education, however you see fit, like a non-public K-12 school program. So it could be used for any kind of scholarships for any kind of program in that school.
So
is that correct?
The one you're talking about, and let's go to 4320014A, and that's if somebody has a copy of the legislation out there, it's on page 24 of the legislation, section 36. You'll see the key addition on page 25, lines 1 and 2, adding in the eligible recipients, or by a public or private nonprofit elementary or secondary school in the state, as an eligible recipient. What the expenditure is, eligible expenditures are actually found on page 24, lines 29. That's direct instruction, research, and educational support purposes, including library and museum acquisitions, contributions to an endowment. So in direct instruction, research, and educational support purposes. That does not necessarily cover facilities. I believe that's in a later section, but this is your...
So direct instruction, that's a rather broad term.
That's right.
So just if you give scholarships to kids, that's direct instruction. Here's my question. The differentiation between a program, giving it to an organization versus a program. So if a donor said, I want this to go to your STEM program.
Yes.
Then you've got a document and a record, I'm assuming, that you're going to spend it on science, technology... You're going to spend it all in this program.
That's right.
So are there requirements for your organization for documentation? You mentioned, if I understood you right, your main concern from DOR is that if you audit a company,
yes,
you're going to audit what they claim.
That's right.
And that wouldn't involve any documentation from the school that it was spent on this particular program.
That's right. The company's incentive is to work with the reputable organization to ensure that they have the right type of paper trail demonstrating that that actually went to where they said it was going to go
but
to.
That's not a DOR.
That's not a DOR thing. We don't want to get in the middle between a donor and an educational institution. That's not where we want to be.
So there's a couple other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Are there going to be forms that are going to be required? You said that if you audited a company, You're going to make sure there's documentation
mm-hmm.
that they actually gave the money to receive the credit. Well, what would be required? Is it just a letter from the receiving organization that we received this, or is there some specific form that's going to be created?
There is no specific requirement. That's something that this legislation just passed. We're interested in having a dialogue with the community, and is that something that would be helpful? And our general thought is the statutes are very clear. The relationship between the donor and the recipient are defined in the statute, and that the proof on a taxpayer is actually relatively straightforward. It's what is the eligible organization? You know, the 501c3 status is a pretty clear thing to be able to demonstrate to a donor. That's the type of things that the department is going to be looking for.
You asked for feedback in relation to a specific question. Well, we, as a 501c3 organization, we already receive donations all
That's
the time
right.
from different companies or individuals. And I would say the easiest thing for us would be just use the system that's in place.
And that's where we did not want to add additional requirements, because I think we take the same look at it. Why have a state create a separate thing when it's already being done, and it's being done in the normal course of business? Yep. Yes, sir.
I have several questions from your presentation, and thank you, Michael, for your presentation. Very, very clear, and the documents you gave us. Do you have any background on why the legislators put that $50,000, okay, you got to get 50 before you can get a tax credit on anything. Is there a rationale or reason for that?
You have to give 50 before anything. I mean, it's 50% of the first $100,000.
Well, okay,
50%. Yep. Yes.
Okay.
And I think the
rationale
there is to, from what I've been able to look back in the record, those started a long time ago. The point was, in the initial donation, that there needs to be skin in the game between both the state providing the credit, which is foregone revenue on the state side, with the business doing a contribution. So it was that first $100,000 was a reasonable place for the state to share the expense with the donor on a 50-50 basis. It was that next $100,000 where it goes 100% and then 50% above that to the $5 million.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know you can't get tax advice, but corporations could take that 50% and take it off their federal taxes.
Each individual circumstances can be very different, and each 501c3 will be different, yeah.
Okay. Another, I think you answered that question. And
is the bill being challenged?
I actually don't know. I don't believe that it is.
My second question is on eligibility.
Yes.
Do you have a document that we have to give you to prove eligibility?
No.
Who determines the eligibility?
The eligibility is in the statute. Each one is, we think, fairly self-evident. Are you a nonprofit, non-public, or
so
private school?
Walk into a company and say, hey, you know, donate to our school because we're eligible.
Yes. However,
basically, the thing you give them is the statute.
You give them, that's right, you give them the statute. Mm-hmm. But also, I think like you were hinting at earlier, there's already a lot of federal work that goes in when you're a 501c3 and you're accepting donations. That's up to the companies. To do a lot of the research on which group they actually want to interact and donate with.
Well, ours is a little different. Our 501c3 is under a church.
Mm-hmm.
Anchorage Christian Schools is under that umbrella. Does that make a difference?
My understanding is it shouldn't, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Because if you're the way it's written in the statute is that are you a 501c3? That is the defining eligibility.
Charitable or organized.
It actually says, that's why I put it in here, charitable or educational organization in the state under a 501c3, yes.
So a religious school is not treated any different, a religious nonprofit school is not treated any differently than a nonprofit school that does not have a religion.
No, and what I'd encourage, there's more than just, I think that's one of the things I was was trying to point out here, it's not just schools. There are many other credits that were added. So the scholarship programs, the promoting the educational opportunities to promote a legacy of public service in the state. There's lots of opportunities that go actually beyond just the traditional school environment to build that broader base of educational opportunity in the communities.
Suggestion?
Yes, sir.
If you've asked anybody online if they want to try and ask, sometimes they wait.
Yep. Good one. With that, is there any questions online that I can answer? No, I'm not on mute. We're the tax guys. We're used to people just walking away and things like that. Yes, sir.
Could the donor stipulate, I only want this money spent on a particular thing? Now, I understand if it's a STEM, to use that example
yep.
again, to get that. But let's say they just donate it to your general scholarship program, and they say, inside your general scholarship program, I want it to go to. Is that just a deal between the donor and the donee?
That's the way it's supposed to be. Is the program in the state is here to, with minimal interference, facilitate that interaction between...
So there's no prohibited expenditures, there's no... I mean, other than...
Other than what's in the statute, yes.
Right, right.
Yes.
Okay.
But you... as receiving organizations and you online as taxpayers should openly have the freedom to interact on what you think is in the best interest of your money and your organization as a receiving organization with minimal interference from us as a department and a state. You have a question back,
yeah,
sir?
I got a little late, so this question may have been asked already, but is there a generic list of all the taxing entities in Alaska? Just a list?
There's not. Yeah, there's not a list, and that's the way our statutes are for confidentiality.
What I might suggest to people is, for example, they might want to go to the companies, the larger ones, their annual statements, and find out, for example, how much their Alaska subsidiary pays in state income taxes.
That's actually a very good place with public companies that you can find a lot of that information. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
These are only towards cash donations as opposed to property that a company may provide for organizations?
Yes, they're cash donations.
Yeah.
And that's my understanding is that's because of valuation questions that, you know, we try and have minimal interference on this.
Sure.
And so putting us in a subjective valuation is a little tough. But these are cash donations. Well, thank you, everybody.
It was a good presentation.
Thank you very much, sir. Yeah.
So, Fish,
yes.
Is it possible that on your DOR website, there could be a drop-down category on this issue that the handout that you just did could be enclosed there so that folks could be referred to that? Because I have a feeling that you'll have both schools and potential entities that wish to donate will have questions as the discussions move on.
I think that's right. I'll work with our office to get something like that set up. One of the benefits is taxpayers are generally familiar with the person they work with in the department. So we actually already are getting regular calls from taxpayers saying, I want to do something like this. Who can I work with? And so they know who to call. But I think for a lot of organizations that are looking to work with this program, the commissioner's office, we really want to be available to be a resource for people.
And if there was a, just along that thing, there was a frequently asked question, because you heard the questions that were asked here, and one of the big questions, it sounds like, is what is the documentation, what is the limitations,
yep.
et cetera. If that could go on there, I think it would be helpful and probably answer a lot of folks' questions that we're not having.
It's a good suggestion. We'll put it together. Yeah.
Any more questions for Mr. Flossy?
Will you have a list for those people who are calling you, asking you where can we donate, of those that want to be involved? Do you give that list out? I'm just asking, how do you answer their question?
We don't have that, and we generally wouldn't.
Yeah, I know. understand.
Yeah, but what?
I wanted to get on it if you were doing.
Okay. I was thinking more, you know, if we knew, you know, I can imagine because we get these calls from taxpayers. I'm looking at working with this organization. Do they qualify? We'll often ask, you know, we'll tell them what they need to look for, but generally not say we know, unless there's, in some instances in the statute, it's so clear, like that's the reason I use the coastal ecosystem or an apprenticeship program under this. There's not even a question on those. You know exactly who they are. Yes, sir.
Are there more informational meetings such as the schedules?
This is actually the first one that I've been asked to do, and I really appreciate it because most of my life is dominated by oil and gas, and this is actually kind of exciting to do something a little bit different and talk about it. So open to doing more and happy to do it. So if the contact information's up there, if there's another group you want me to come talk to, I'd be very happy to make more time.
Yeah. I would just say, Mike, that down the road here, you probably have a couple more of these meetings with a broader audience, meaning
yeah.
The folks here, for the most part, are interested in the non-public school aspect. But as you mentioned, there's labor training credits. There's all kinds of credits within this long credit list. So there may be one or two larger meetings with larger groups wanting to have a discussion with
you. And I can tell you on the other projects I work on, the vocational, the STEM, the ability to really build some of that in state is so important to our future. And it's one of the, I think, the best additions, both for non-public and for public, just the STEM. We look at it in all the large projects, be it Susitna, be it Gasline, be it roads. The engineering needs in this state are just huge, and getting more of them done in state is really important, and having non-public, private, public, everybody work together to build more of them is one of, I think, the best additions personally from what I work on in this legislation that was passed. So it's exciting.
Yep. The only last comment I have is I appreciate the minimal approach that the department is doing with this, because too often in government we believe we have to put all kinds of regs on to make sure that we don't hurt ourselves. And I think it kills a lot of efforts, innovation, and folks wanting to be charitable. So I would just suggest you resist the temptation.
Thank you for that. They cost money to do, and we try and do them as infrequently as possible for us. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, folks, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Welcome to the Valley.
Thank you, Mike. That was a good presentation.
Thank you very much.
Sir. Most of my questions.
Yeah, each individual instance is going to be different. Yeah. Yeah. Reach out to them.
The Department of Ed has nothing to do with this.
Right.
They would be the ones that might want to put more on these controls. So.